This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in Gaza continues for the 169th day as the number of Palestinians killed surpasses 32,100. Russia says it has arrested suspected gunmen as the death toll from the shooting rampage at the concert hall near Moscow hits 143. And Russian president declares a day of mourning and vows to punish whomever ordered the shooting at the concert hall. Hello and welcome to World News, coming to you from our international studios right here in Tehran. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, nearly 6 months now into the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza, the regime's relentless bombardment and shelling continue to claim innocent lives in the besieged Palestinian territory. Several areas, including Jabalia in the north and Rafah in the south, have come under fresh area strikes. At least 7 people have been killed in Israeli shelling as aid was being distributed in Gaza City. The Gaza Health Ministry says 114 more Palestinians lost their lives in Israeli strikes in a matter of 24 hours. The death toll from the U.S.-backed genocide in Gaza since October has now surpassed 32,100, most of them women and children. 7,000 others are unaccounted for and feared to be dead under the rubble of their homes. Over 74,400 Gazans have also been injured. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, on a visit to the doorstep of the war-ravaged Gaza, has appealed for a ceasefire and the delivery of aid into the territory.
Nothing justifies the collective punishment of the Palestinian people. Now more than ever, it is time for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. It is time to silence the guns. Palestinians in Gaza, children, women, men, remain stuck in a non-stop nightmare.
Guterres was speaking in a visit to the Rafah crossing on the Egypt-Palestine border. He described the long line of blockaded relief trucks on one side of the gates and starving Palestinians on the other, a moral outrage. The UN chief said the choice is between increasing aid or starvation. Guterres said the continuation of the war will make the humanitarian situation worse. He also warned Israel against launching a ground operation in Rafah. The Gaza Strip is struggling with severe shortages in food, water, medication, and fuel. Israel has blocked the entry of almost all essentials into the besieged territory, including foodstuff, medicine, and water, since the regime began its genocidal war on October the 7th. The death toll from a terror attack at a concert hall outside of the Russian capital rises to 143. Scores of people were also injured in the shooting rampage. The attackers, dressed in camouflage outfits, entered the Crocus City Hall on Friday and opened fire there. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility, but authorities in Moscow have dismissed the assertion, emphasizing that the investigation is still underway to ascertain the culprits. The Federal Security Service has reported the detention of 11 suspects. Russian President Vladimir Putin says the 4 people directly involved in the attack were trying to flee to Ukraine when they were detained.
All perpetrators, organizers, and masterminds behind this crime will get just an inevitable punishment. Whoever they are, whoever guides them, I repeat, we will identify and punish everyone who stands behind the terrorists. who prepared this atrocity, this attack on Russia, on our people. Four perpetrators of the terrorist act who shot and killed people have been detained. They were traveling towards Ukraine.
Putin described the attack as a barbaric terrorist act and announced a day of national mourning. He said some people on the Ukrainian side had prepared to let the suspects cross the border from Russia. Ukraine has denied any involvement in the attack. The massacre has been slammed by countries across the globe. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned the attack in the strongest possible terms, while the Security Council underlined the need to hold accountable those responsible for the deadly incident. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi also censored the attack and extended his condolences to the families of the victims. We earlier discussed the deadly terror attack in our news review program. Let's take a listen at what our guests had to say.
Joining us now for the program is Greg Simons, independent researcher and author from Uppsala, Sweden, and Tim Anderson, director at the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, joining us from Sydney, Australia. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program, I guess. Tim, we'll start with you. 93 people dead at this concert hall, this act of terror. What do you make of it?
Well, it's an appalling act, and the suspicion in Russia, of course, initially was that it came from Ukraine, which has been massing more foreign mercenaries in the Kiev region and carrying out some cross-border incursions in the Belgorod area. So the suspicion lay on Ukraine, with the claim from ISIS, or ISIS-K as some sources say it. It really points the finger back at the US, which it had, has admitted that it had, if not advanced knowledge, it was warning US citizens in Russia not to go to large gatherings in the Moscow area some 2 weeks before this happened. So a lot of suspicion should land on Washington, I suggest, because they showed some degree of advanced knowledge. And then after that, if it indeed is one of the ISIS cells that carried that out, we know that in the past, the only operative capacity of ISIS has been to assist US operations, although they claim to be fighting ISIS in West Asia. But in practice, they were an agency of the US. And President Biden, when he was vice president 10 years ago, and the head of the US Army admitted that. They said that all of the funds and the arms that ISIS received in Syria and Iraq were from the allies of the US in that region. So it's always operated to fight the people that the US is fighting. It never attacked the Israelis, for example, or they claim to be fighting some holy Islamic cause. So I think suspicion should rest very squarely on the US, as it has a number of agencies and proxies, of course, across the region, and as we know, also in Russia, and it's backing this war from the Ukrainian side as well.
Thank you, Tim. Greg Simons, welcome to the program out of Sweden. Now, Greg, your thoughts. I mean, Daesh on his Telegram account claimed responsibility, and out of the blue comes the U.S. saying they feel to a great extent confident that it was Daesh that was behind this. The only thing I can think of is maybe that was a response to the campaign against the terrorist group the Russians carried out with their allies in Syria. But so much time has passed since then that it kind of makes it suspect, and the Russians aren't buying that it was purely a Daesh operation. Your thoughts?
Well, absolutely. I agree with Tim to a great extent. If we look at political conflicts in the past, when the US had a problem with Duterte in the Philippines, all of a sudden you had ISIS turning up in the Philippines. When they had a problem with Maduro, ISIS turned up in Venezuela. And you've had US Department of Defense and Pentagon documents such as audits saying that they are supporting ISIS militarily, materially. And one has to look, I mean, at this point, who benefits? And I mean, this nonsense that this is a Reichstag fire incident is just a red herring. And I mean, it's the US, they've been humiliated once more. I mean, they're getting humiliated in Ukraine. They were not able to stop Putin from being re-elected. So now they're trying political warfare using their proxies, such as ISIS.
Okay, well thanks. Tim, it was really odd. About 3.5 weeks ago, supposedly, Washington warned the Russians that they're going to have a terrorist attack carried out on their soil, most likely somewhere in or around Moscow, possibly at a large gathering, a concert hall. They mentioned, the Russians said it was very loose information. They couldn't make much of it. But it's really wild because here's the U.S. giving all these weapons to Israel. Then it has this like a lame semblance of olive branch by these little package, aid packets that parachutes into Gaza. And you see the same thing here. All these weapons are going to Ukraine, and here's the slither of an olive branch of this information that amounts to absolutely nothing, just like that aid in Gaza. What kind of role is it a game that the U.S. is playing with the Russians when it comes to sharing intelligence on this so-called act of terror?
That warning was obviously directed at U.S. citizens, warning them not to go to big gatherings in that area. But let's not forget that when the previous terrible terrorist attack occurred in Kerman in Iran earlier this year, who was it that claimed responsibility there when all of the suspicion was on the U.S. and the Israelis at that time? It was also ISIS-K. So ISIS is a convenient label that's trotted out, I think, to hide the real hand behind these sorts of things. And as I say, my suspicion rests very firmly with Washington. They're the puppet masters. Let's look past the monkeys a little bit and look at the organ grinders.
And that went right over my head Greg. I didn't even make that correlation that we have 100 dead in Iran not too long ago, 3 months ago, and now we have another 100 dead in Russia, two U.S. adversaries.
Absolutely. I mean, this is what they do. It's their political warfare. And the point about it is they believe that there is some kind of plausible deniability in their actions here. But let's look at what has been done. Not only yesterday, but what has been done systematically in the past. It's like a copy and paste of the same kind of terrorist action in the territory of an adversarial country as a means to destabilize it, because it's standing up, it's being a subject of international relations. It doesn't bow down and become an object of U.S. geopolitics.
I want to thank you for joining us on our news review program here. That was Mr. Greg Simons there joining us from Uppsala, Sweden. And Tim Anderson joining us out of Sydney, Australia. Thanks for joining us here. Brings us to the end of your news review program. Thanks for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
Tens of thousands of Yemenis have once again filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities to reaffirm their steadfast support for the Palestinian cause and resistance. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
Under the banner "Our operations will continue, stop your aggression," tens of thousands of Yemenis have taken to the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities across the country to renew their full support for the Palestinians. They have also called on Yemen's armed forces to persist with their naval operations in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden in solidarity with Palestine.
We realize that the cause is our cause, and the enemy is our enemy, and we are fighting a battle that is essentially our battle. Our blood is one, we and the Palestinians, and Islam is the religion of all of us, and we cannot abandon our brothers in religion. We are fighting from a Quranic culture, and what the people of Gaza are exposed to is the same as what the Yemenis were exposed to.
Protesters chanted slogans criticizing the United Nations Security Council's recent statement against Yemen's naval operations. They argue that the world body has demonstrated its alignment with White House policies, disregarding its role in maintaining international security.
Today, Yemenis are rallying in dozens of squares in their millions, as if it were a human flood, an extension of the Al-Aqsa flood operation. The Yemenis today, despite the years of war and despite the difficult circumstances they are going through, are still committed to their first and central issue, which is the Palestinian cause.
The Yemeni people came out today to send a message to the people of Palestine in Gaza that they are not alone.
alone. The Yemenis stand with Palestine with all their military capabilities, whether naval forces or drones. And our message to the enemies is that we will not stop fighting and confronting them.
Earlier, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, warned the Western powers of stronger and more effective attacks in the future. He highlighted that the Yemeni army has managed to outmaneuver Western technology in surveillance, jamming and interception, marking a significant advancement in the development of Yemen's military industries.
Despite the sunny weather, thousands of Yemenis have gathered here while fasting to make their point. They say if not for the border restrictions, they would pass through neighboring states to reach Palestine and join the struggle against the Israeli invaders until the liberation of the occupied territories. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
The 31st edition of the International Exhibition of the War On has kicked off in Tehran. The event is held annually during the month of Ramadan, showcasing a variety of products dedicated to the promotion of the Holy Book. Fatima Masumeh brings us the details.
The International Quran Exhibition is the most significant exhibition of its kind in the Muslim world. It will run from March 20th to April 2nd at Tehran's Musalla. Held during the holy month of Ramadan, the fair features paintings depicting verses and teachings of the Holy Quran, as well as calligraphy and illumination artworks. This year's event has a particular focus on the situation in the Gaza Strip and Palestine.
This year's fair has several interesting sections. We have had a special focus and investment on some strategic sections, such as the subject of children and youth. The aim is to teach Quranic concepts to them through various attractive tools and games and other artistic means. Another important issue that we particularly paid special attention to was the issue of Palestine and Gaza resistance movement, which is the top issue of the Islamic world.
The fair features 45 Quranic institutions and 24 governmental bodies. The Quranic meeting of the exhibition will focus on the issue of Palestine and situation of the Gaza Strip in the presence of scholars from 25 countries, 5 ministers from Islamic states, as well as representatives from Iraq, Lebanon, Turkey, Poland, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Tunisia, Libya, Algeria, and Qatar are invited to take part in the event.
These days we are witnessing Israeli genocide in Gaza, and it's heartbreaking for everyone to see the innocent people of Palestine under such conditions. The issue of the unity of people is very evident in the international section of the exhibition. One of the important messages of the international section of the fair is to speak loud and clear about the defenseless and innocent people of the Gaza Strip and the resistance movement.
The Tehran International Quran Exhibition is annually organized by Iran's Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance. As always, the exhibition will host several Quranic competitions. Researchers and university professors have also been invited to talk about the Holy Quran and its teachings.
The International Holy Quran Exhibition opened on March 20th with the aim of promoting the Holy Quran and its concepts. This year, the focus of the fair will be on the Gaza Strip and Palestinian resistance movements, as well as pertinent issues like the Al-Aqsa flood operation and Zionism. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
And with that, it brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you so much for staying with us.
Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz.
in the limelight.
Through consistent and glaring failures in their coverage, establishment media, including supposedly liberal outlets from the BBC and CNN to the Guardian and New York Times, have smoothed the way for the Zionist regime to carry out mass slaughter in Gaza, what the World Court has assessed as a genocide. Western establishments and their media have been waging a giant campaign of misdirection for the past 5 months, as they have against Palestinians over previous years and decades. Western publics have been encouraged to look in the wrong direction. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East iWrote, hostages tortured to death, parents executed in front of their children, doctors beaten, babies murdered, sexual assault weaponized. This is part of an ever-growing list of documented atrocities committed by the Israeli regime in the 5 months since October 7th, quite separate from the carpet bombing of 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza and a famine induced by the Zionist regime's obstruction of aid. Last week, an investigation by the Israeli newspaper Haaretz disclosed that some 27 Palestinians seized off Gaza's streets over the past 5 months are known to have died during interrogations inside the occupied territories called Israel. Some were denied medical treatment, but most are likely to have been tortured to death. 3 months ago, a Haaretz editorial warned that the Zionist regime jails must not become execution facilities for Palestinians. Israeli TV channels have been excitedly taking viewers on tours of detention centers, showing the appalling conditions Palestinians are kept in, as well as the psychological and physical abuse they are subjected to. An Israeli regime judge recently called the makeshift cages in which Palestinians are held unsuitable for humans. Remember, a large proportion of the 4,000 or so Palestinians taken hostage by the Zionist regime since October 7th, probably the vast majority, are civilians, like the men and boys paraded through Gaza's streets or held in a stadium stripped of clothing before being dragged off to a dark cell in Israel. According to Israeli regime media, many dozens of Palestinian women, including pregnant women, have been seized too, but in their case, off camera. According to United Nations legal experts, Palestinian women are suffering the most degrading forms of abuse at the hands of the Zionist regime's military. The experts observed that Palestinian women and girls in detention were reportedly being subjected to multiple forms of sexual assault. At least two female Palestinian detainees were reportedly raped, while others were reportedly threatened with rape and sexual violence. The Zionist regime troops are also believed to have taken photos of female detainees in degrading circumstances and then uploaded them online. Palestinian women and girls in Gaza are also reported by their families to have gone missing after contact with the Zionist regime army. They said, "There are disturbing reports of at least one female infant forcibly transferred by the Israeli army into Israel, and of children being separated from their parents, whose whereabouts remain unknown." A separate report by the UN last week revealed that 21 of its staff humanitarian aid workers had been snatched by the Zionist regime. They were then tortured to extract confessions, most likely false, of involvement In the October 7th events, their torture included beatings, waterboarding, and threats to family members. Those confessions were cited by Western allies as the grounds, in fact, the only known grounds for cutting off funding to the UN relief agency UNRWA, the last lifeline for Gaza's starving population. It was these claims extracted through torture that helped the Zionist regime rationalize its imposing of a famine on Gaza. Of the 1,000 detainees subsequently released, 29 were children, one as young as six, and 80 women. Some were reported to have cancer and chronic illnesses such as Alzheimer's. According to the UN investigation, Palestinians reported severe punishment beatings, being caged with attack dogs, and suffering sexual assault. Physical evidence such as broken ribs, dislocated shoulders, bite marks, and burns was still visible many weeks later. These horrors, of course, are not just taking place in cells and interrogation rooms inside Israel. Gaza is being subjected to astonishing levels of brutality and sadism from the Zionist regime troops, quite aside from the carpet bombing and enforced starvation of civilians. The Zionist regime snipers have fired into Gaza's hospitals, killing medical staff and patients there. The Zionist regime's military has used Palestinians as human shields, including one man sent into a hospital, his hands bound, to announce an Israeli order to evacuate the premises. The Zionist regime forces executed him on his return. Those trying to follow such evacuation orders, waving white flags, have been shot at. Medical facilities have been repeatedly invaded by the Zionist regime military in stark violation of international law. Those who could not be evacuated, such as premature babies, have been left to die unattended, even while Israeli regime troops were occupying the building. Other examples of murderous cruelty are documented daily. Unarmed Palestinians, including those waving white flags, have been shot dead by the Zionist regime troops. Palestinian parents have been executed in cold blood in front of their children. There have been repeated episodes of Israeli regime forces gunning down en masse desperate Palestinians trying to reach aid, as happened yet again this week. And even Israeli regime hostages trying to escape their captors have been killed by the very Israeli troops they were trying to surrender to. These are just some of the cases of Israeli regime sadism and barbarity that have surfaced briefly in Western media coverage, soon to be forgotten.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another special edition of the program The Ocean of Dua. In this special edition during the holy month of Ramadan, We will be having a look at different parts of the supplication Abu Hamza Sumali. We will be bringing you different commentaries on some parts of this dua. We'll be back after you listen to these parts.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا مولاي بذكرك عاش قلبي وبمناجاتك بردت ألم الخوف عني فيا مولاي ويا مؤملي ويا منتهى سؤلي فرق بيني وبين الذنب المانع لي من لزوم طاعتك فإنما أسألك لقديم الرجاء فيك وعظيم الطمع منك الذي أوجبته على نفسك من الرأفة والرحمة.
Dear brothers and sisters, we have reached this part of the supplication of Abu Hamza Thumali. Ya Mawlai, bidhikrika asha qalbi, O my master, in your remembrance my heart takes delight. وَبِمُنَاجَاتِكَ بَرَّتُ أَلَمَ الْخَوْفِ عَنِّي. And through prayers I hold communion with you, easing the pain of fear that torments me. Regarding this part, dear listeners, we mentioned that the essence of Allah's remembrance is dhikr, and a remembrance of Allah is behind all religious obligations and even our recommended acts. And the spirit of all these is to remember Almighty Allah. And that's why the Holy Quran states, أَقِمِ الصَّلَاةَ لِذِكْرِ. The highest form of ritual prayer, the highest form of worship, is for the remembrance of the Almighty Allah. Now, we also concluded in the previous episode that the only factor that can give tranquility and peace of mind to a person living in this hectic world, in the world of anxieties, is remembrance of Allah. Because the Holy Quran says, أَلَا بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ تَطْمَئِنُّ الْقُلُوبِ. The hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance. Those who truly remember Allah, and in whose souls His remembrance is deeply rooted, are so calm and tranquil. You may have seen them, you may have had communications with them. Those are so calm that no event can make them anxious and agitated. In our time, we have had many people who were the examples of such personalities. Traditions have likened the believer to a mountain. Traditions have described the true mu'min as stronger than even a mountain. It is because storms may make stones on top of the mountain roll down, but the hurricane of events can never weaken the faith of a believer, just like the state of mountain that never moves. المؤمن كالجبل الراسخ لا تحركه العواصف. The believer is like a mountain that cannot be shaken by the winds. Why? Because of the state of his heart. Because his heart is connected to something that cannot be shaken. Because his heart is connected to something that cannot be transformed, cannot be extinguished. So, in addition to eternal felicity, remembrance of Allah is what gives peace of mind in this world, which in itself is a blessing beyond description.
Ramadan, 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 Ramadan. Ramadan.
The ocean of dua.
Dear listeners, about this state of qalb, about this remembrance of the Almighty Allah, in the Holy Quran, we see that God uses an excellent expression which is worthy of reflection. He says, فَذْكُرُونِي أَذْكُرْكُمْ وَشْكُرُوا لِي وَلَا تَكْفُرُوا. Remember me, and I will remember you. What does this expression mean? فَذْكُرُونِي أَذْكُرْكُمْ. Remember me, and I will remember you. Why do we have to reflect upon this part of the verse? Because we need to understand what Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says. Ya Mawlai, bidhikrika aasha qalbi. How do we make our hearts take delight by remembrance of Allah? What is the practical meaning of remembrance of the Almighty Allah? Now, when Quran says, فَذْكُرُونِ يَذْكُرْكُمْ, this expression can be analyzed in different ways according to different views and levels of understanding. Of course, God is aware of everyone and everything at every moment. وَمَا رَبُّكَ بِغَافِلٍ عَمَّا تَعْمَلُونَ وَمَا كَانَ رَبُّكَ نَسِيَّ. And your Lord is not forgetful. But Allah has perfect knowledge of the past, present, and future. So it is clear, having these verses in our mind, that when God says, remember me and I will remember you, it doesn't mean that you will cause yourself to be reminded by me as your God. No, of course, God is having perfect knowledge of the past, present, and future. Nothing is hidden from him. So when God says, remember me and I will remember you, this remembrance is something else. It is a special remembrance of God towards his servants and true friends, towards awliya. It does not refer to his general attention towards all creatures, because all creation are receiving his attention at the same time simultaneously. He is the creator, and if he even stops paying attention to even one of them for even a second, they will be totally destroyed. But this remembrance that God says, فَذْكُرُونِي أَذْكُرْكُمْ, is something else. In interpreting this verse, we will try to have a look at different traditions and try to understand what the true meaning of remembrance of the Almighty Allah is in the next episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you throughout my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The U.S. is offering humanitarian aid to a population it has helped to devastate. The hypocrisy is breathtaking. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East IROADS, since Arab and Western countries, including the U.S., began airdropping aid into Gaza, we have wondered, why are they not using land routes as thousands of trucks stacked with vital humanitarian supplies sit on the Egyptian side of the Rafah crossing? According to a February report from Al Jazeera, aerial and satellite footage showed more than 2,000 aid trucks waiting to cross at Rafah. And why are these aid drops coming 5 months after the Zionist regime launched its war on Gaza? While this might seem like a humanitarian effort at first glance, there appear to be ulterior motives at play. Since the war began last October, international appeals have mounted to bring life-saving aid to besieged Palestinians in Gaza. But neither these appeals nor the horrifying video footage that has emerged of starving civilians has moved neighboring countries to stop the Israeli regime atrocities that have killed more than 31,000 people and created conditions of widespread hunger. The Zionist regime's strategy entails asserting absolute control over the humanitarian conditions in Gaza. Why would it agree to airdropped aid while obstructing the delivery of vital goods via land, the latter which would be much easier and cheaper? Regardless of the method, the Zionist regime insists on inspecting all aid that enters Gaza by opting for airdrops and sea bridges instead of utilizing the Rafah land crossing. The Tel Aviv regime is sending a message that Cairo's control over the border area is merely symbolic, while the real levers of power are with the Zionist regime alone. The use of airdrops, especially from Arab countries, also highlights the shortcomings of Arab and American efforts to alleviate the suffering in Gaza. Instead of applying pressure on the child killer regime of Israel to open the Rafah crossing, they have circumvented its refusal by launching a more complex, dangerous, and expensive aid operation. The fabricated regime of Israel routinely uses the media in an attempt to enhance its image and create the perception of humanitarian in times of war. By showcasing aid planes, it diverts attention from the situation at Rafah and aims to dilute public criticism, but it is crucial to critically examine such narratives and manipulations. By ensuring the continuing closure of Rafah, Gaza's sole gateway to the outside world, the Zionist regime further isolates the territory's Palestinian residents. The airdrops it has allowed, meanwhile, have been disorganized, random, and ineffective, failing to address the logistical challenges of aid distribution. The aid drops even turn deadly when parachutes fail to deploy and the boxes hurtle towards Gaza, killing five Palestinians who had been eagerly awaiting the delivery of much-needed relief. As one friend in northern Gaza said, "With us being killed, even with the aid dropping, we have experienced all forms of death." As the international community comes together to support the people of Gaza, it is crucial to prioritize the safety and dignity of those in need. We have been pushed to the brink, a paltry symbolic aid drop with no plan for its safe distribution does not help Palestinians, but rather deeply humiliate the people of Gaza. Those seen in video footage running towards the airdrops come from all walks of life, including doctors, engineers, and academics. Palestinians are being degraded and then thrown bits of food for millions of hungry mouths. There is a much easier solution. The Zionist regime must immediately open all land crossings into Gaza.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be asking a question which is very significant and pertinent, and it's related to the time we are currently in and the month that we are passing through. And that is the month of Ramadan. As you know, the month of Ramadan is a very important month in the Islamic year. It is the most important month of the Islamic year, in fact. And on behalf of IRIB English Radio and The Key, we would like to offer our esteemed listeners congratulations on this very auspicious and blessed month. The question that we want to ask is this: why is the month of Ramadan so significant for Muslims? Why is it so significant and important? In some of our previous sessions, we have examined the reason for this. Some of the reasons for this. One of the reasons, perhaps the most pertinent reason, was the fact that the Quran was revealed in the month of Ramadan upon the heart of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And this is, you know, the Quran obviously is the guidance for mankind, the guidance of human beings towards that which is best for them in this world and in the hereafter. This was one of the significant aspects of the month of Ramadan. Another important aspect was that in the month of Ramadan, the doors of repentance are opened, and the chances of our repentance being accepted are more than in that of other months. Another important aspect of Ramadan was the fact that in Ramadan, we're obliged to fast. And fasting, in contrast to other months, fasting is obligatory in this month. Today we're going to be looking at another very significant aspect of the month of Ramadan. And that aspect is this, that in the month of Ramadan, a person's destiny is determined. Meaning, the events that will transpire throughout the year are ordained and destined in the month of Ramadan. Depending on how we act in this month, right? You know, how we act in this month will determine what will happen to us and will transpire with us in the month of Ramadan. That, and this is very general. It not only includes the sustenance, our sustenance throughout the year that we are going to be given. It also determines our lifespans, whether we will live or die. In this year, our life will continue or we will pass away. And other things as well. This is something which is attested to by a very blessed hadith from Imam Sadiq. Let's look at this hadith and let's see what it says. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, in his advice to his children, heralding the advent of the month of Ramadan, he said the following: exert yourselves in doing good deeds, for verily, exert yourselves in doing good deeds, for verily, in this month, sustenance, this is the part which is related to our topic, sustenance is apportioned, lifespans are destined, the names of Allah's select servants who wish to strive towards Him are recorded down. So this is one of the significances of this holy month. And to be more specific, and if we want to explain this a little bit more, this could be because in this month there is a night called the Night of Ordainment, the Laylatul Qadr, and that is a night which likely falls in the month of Ramadan, and in which our destiny for the remaining part of the year is ordained. And coincidentally, we would like to add here that one of the reasons why these spiritual wayfarers, the friends of God, they calculate the beginning of their year from the month of Ramadan is for this very reason. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the significance and importance of the month of Ramadan in the light of the hadith and the Quranic verses. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, in the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.